the fifth kind. For more than 100 years, scientists have looked for a single principle to explain the functioning and balance of the universe. Quantum research points to an astonishing conclusion. That principle is consciousness. Quantum research has found that consciousness alters how the universe manifests and behaves.
Plato argues that in the beginning there was consciousness, one single universal field of consciousness. It's perfect unity, perfect love. The visible material universe manifested, he said, in order for that consciousness to express itself. Now, what does that mean in material terms? I think as soon as you begin thinking about a mechanism for that, you're talking about panspermia.
Panspermia is a scientific theory which proposes that the genetic coding for conscious, intelligent life was deliberately disseminated throughout the cosmos. Whenever that coding lands in a hospitable environment, it begins to produce the kinds of intelligent, conscious life forms with which we are familiar on planet Earth. The theory's proponents include Maxim Mikulov, Vladimir Sherbach, Leslie Orgel, Francis Crick, and Carl Sagan in the 1960s. All have argued strongly for this theory, and in the case of Mikulov and Sherbach, have produced solid data to support it. By the landing of probes on comets, the European Space Agency has spent more than $80 billion testing the theory. Is planet Earth a vehicle for conscious life? As human beings, what levels of consciousness are we capable of? In the late 19th century, a new generation of esoteric writers began exploring the concept of the Akashic Record. The word Akasha is a Sanskrit word meaning space or ether. Russian philosopher Helena Petrovna Blavatsky described Akasha as an all-pervading life force with the imprint of all human thought and action encoded within it. Alfred Percy Sinnett and Henry Steele Olcott drew on Buddhist ideas and concepts to develop the idea further. In 1889, Charles Webster Leadbeater put forward the idea that in the right state of consciousness, the Akashic Record could be read. These theosophical writers began to put forward the idea that an Akashic Record of all human activity can be found in the unifying web of space-time, which they called the etheric plane. Ancient religions, mystical and shamanic traditions, also speak of a metaphysical record of the human story. Islam speaks of the preserved tablet. Christianity speaks of the Lamb's Book of Life. In the Hebrew scriptures, the psalmist writes that all our days are written in the Book of God. These 19th century philosophers and researchers began to ask if these religious concepts might be a description of a real-world phenomenon open to a more scientific approach. In other words, was this metaphysical archive referred to by Christianity, Judaism, and Islam a closed book, accessible only to esoteric elites and priesthoods? Or was it a reality built into the fabric of the universe and accessible to any who know how? Is it possible that the Akashic Record might be a natural property of the universe, and that it holds a precise record of human life ready to be accessed, whether by appropriate tools or an amenable state of consciousness? But what might be the mechanism of such an archive of conscious experience?
I grew up in a pre-digital age, and so when you wanted to record sound or pictures, you would use magnetic tape. And that technology was all about creating interference patterns in the electromagnetic field of magnetized tape. And then another machine could come along and decode those interference patterns back into sound and images. Now, your body and my body each generates its own electromagnetic field. And every thought, every intention, every feeling, emotion, experience creates an alteration or an interference pattern in that electromagnetic field. Planet Earth has its own electromagnetic field, and every human body on the planet creates a minor adaptation or interference pattern in that electromagnetic field. Now, if we have been able to create machines that can decode interference patterns in magnetic fields back into sound and images, then might the interference patterns in planet Earth's electromagnetic field be a mechanism of record? Might our planet itself be the field in which human memory is contained?
Early theosophical writers proposed that the Akashic record was encoded within the etheric plane. Some researchers today suggest that the unified field which connects all the space, energy, and matter of the universe may be the language of today's science for the etheric plane. Mystics and shamanic leaders have often found other language to explain their ability to download Akashic information. One such was Saint Seraphim of Sarov, a mystic who became renowned in 18th and 19th century Russia for his ability to read people and download precise information about them. People whom he had never met before, Seraphim would greet and give details about their lives and careers. On occasion, information about their health and any matter they had come to discuss. On one occasion, Seraphim told his visitor precisely how much he had spent on doctors trying to fix the condition he had now brought for healing. Seraphim's approach was one rooted in the Eastern discipline of hesychasm, a practice of prayer and inner stillness.
In my book about Saint Seraphim of Sarov, My Dinner with Anton, I talk about a moment where Seraphim is in conversation with one of his counselees. And his counselee, Nicholas Matofilov, asks him, "Seraphim, how is it that you are so able to read a human being? You're so able to read the human heart?" And Seraphim said, "Well, when I start speaking, I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. I simply submit my mind to the Spirit of God, and I say the first thing that comes into my mind, and I begin speaking, believing that the Spirit of God will guide me from there." Now, it wasn't just an in-the-moment skill, because his was a mind that was really well prepared through a discipline of silence. And yet, in that simple way, speaking the first thing and going from there, he was able to download phenomenally precise information about people time and time again. Just recently, somebody showed me this schematic, and I thought, oh my goodness, that so describes my career. And it's why, for instance, there was a time when I was working as a pastor and a personal coach, but Christmas was coming and I actually needed some cash. So I worked for a while at the mail sorting office on the night shift. Now, on the night shift, everybody's brainwaves are in a slightly different place, and it was fun working there. I was meeting people I'd never met before. We had our lunch break usually about 2 in the morning, and so one morning we all went down into the canteen, and I thought, I'm going to sit on a different table today. I'm going to meet some new people. So I sat on a table with a number of young guys in their 20s, all having a rather boisterous, lighthearted conversation. And in the middle of that, they said to me, "And what do you do?" And somehow we got onto the topic of how sometimes a pastor or a coach may need to be able to read a person and make some intuitive leaps. And so one of the guys said, "Okay, do it on me." And I thought, oh, no, Paul, you fool. You've dug yourself a hole here. And so I said, no, it's not really something that you can just, you know, play with or turn on like a switch. And he said, no, do it on me, he said, because we might never meet again and I'm interested. And in that moment, I could see he was interested. He was sincere. And his sincerity pulled me into a different frame of mind. And I thought, I have to respond. And so I just allowed myself to look at him and I began speaking what I believed I was perceiving. And I tried not to say too much because I didn't want to embarrass him and I certainly didn't want to embarrass myself, but I just tried to focus on him and speak what was coming into my mind. Well, his jaw dropped as I did this. And then the bell rang and we all had to leave and get back to our posts. Well, I saw him again the next day and I was very relieved that he wasn't angry with me because I went away thinking, what on earth did I just do? I have no idea if any of that was accurate or what just happened. But he came to me and he said, Paul, it was destiny that you sat on our table yesterday because you were spot on and you're absolutely right. I need to make some changes so I'm actually serving my life purpose. That's what I need to be doing. Thank you so much. And I thought, my goodness, how did that happen? And it made me reflect on what some people call the Akashic Record, this field of information that is beyond ourselves that we can sometimes draw upon. I'd heard it spoken of in terms that made it sound like the Akashic Record was very vague, very remote. Maybe if you're lucky, if you're a shaman or a psychic or a clairvoyant, you can get some information from there, but it's not for ordinary folk. In that moment, I found that in the right frame of mind, yes, we can access that information. And it was in a moment when I had stilled myself and put myself in a place of wanting to help the other person. And I wonder if that's one of the keys to it.
Perhaps the Akashic Record is not something to be toyed with or trivialized. Yet, many shamans, mystics, and storytellers attest that a playful heart, a loving intent, the desire to help, and a creative spirit are often the keys that open the doors to this transformational realm. But what is the dimension that holds this cosmic archive?
Theosophists talk about the Akashic Record being held in the etheric plane. Well, what if the etheric plane is what scientists today mean by the unified field? In that case, we're talking about the force that connects us all, that binds us together. Perhaps then the Akashic Record isn't something impossibly distant. It's something that couldn't possibly be closer to us.
If the unified field of today's science truly is the repository of all human experience and consciousness, perhaps you and I are in reality more conscious, more aware, and privileged with greater access to this metaphysical treasure than we have ever imagined.
When I was a boy, my mum and dad had a washing machine. Now, it was pre-digital, but it was an electronic washing machine, so it had electrical circuits in it. Obviously, its function in our home was to wash our clothes, although for our cat, it had another function. It was a massage machine. But it also had a third, rather unexpected feature. Somehow, and as a boy, I always thought this was quite miraculous, our washing machine could play Radio 1. It wasn't designed for it. It was entirely accidental. But if there was no noise around and if the machine was idling, you could hear Radio 1 on it. You could hear the songs and you could hear the words. Radio 1 broadcasts at a particular frequency. Evidently, there was an electrical circuit within our washing machine that was just the perfect length so that it had the exact frequency to match, to resonate with the frequency coming from Radio 1. And when that happened, the circuit would translate that frequency into a kinetic energy, and that's how we were getting the sound. Now, our washing machine couldn't do everything, a radio could do. We could get Radio 1 on it, but we couldn't turn the volume up and down, and we couldn't tune into other stations. And it was able to do that because it had circuitry in it that could pick up this frequency from somewhere else. If I am a consciousness machine, then I have circuitry designed for a particular frequency, a particular kind of consciousness. And maybe like that washing machine, I can pick up on the consciousness of others who resonate with a particular frequency. And maybe that's why you or I might feel another's feelings, even at a great distance. And how often have you heard people say things like, I knew I had to call, I knew something had happened, I knew you'd passed, or I knew you were going to say that. And maybe that's why some of us experience memories of other lives, lives other than our own. It may also be why we sometimes feel a very strong connection with people from other times and places without having any idea why we feel that connection. But it may be we're wired in some way similar, that something in us is mathematically similar to something in them.
Quantum research, string theory, unified field theory may all offer objective frameworks for these subjective experiences. But from our knowledge at present, where do these ideas take us? And what practical application might we find?
What I take from this is a very simple discipline, and it's the discipline of noticing. Now, this will seem so simple, so rudimentary, but I found it very powerful. Get a journal, and every time you knew they were going to say that or knew something had happened, every time you feel an unexplained connection, every time you remember a memory that isn't your own, and that might be in your conscious life or in your dream life, make a note in a journal. Firstly, you'll begin to notice how frequently this happens, and then you may begin to notice patterns. Then you may begin to get a sense of why is this person or this image so much on your mind. And as you notice who these connections are with, people living now, in the past, or in the future, you may begin to get a sense of what is it in you that's mathematically similar to what's in them. And in those patterns, you may begin to get a new glimpse of your place and your purpose in the universe.
Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind TV. Remember to subscribe and click on the bell for notifications so that you never miss when we upload new content. For uncensored access to our full interviews and documentaries, go to fifthkind.tv. For more videos about paleo contact and the wisdom of the world's ancestral narratives, go to the Paul Wallace channel, subscribe, and click on the bell. Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind TV.